Hi, this is Dave Rowntree, author of Paranormal Technology, Understanding the Science of Ghost Hunting, lecturer, author, and paranormal researcher. And when you're not busy in the field, do what I do and listen to The Mallard Report with Jim Mallard.
The opinions expressed in The Mallard Report are those of the hosts and participants and are not intended to and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of any simulcasting radio network or sponsor. All listeners are advised to make their own decisions.
It's the Mallard Report. Yeah, the Mallard Report. The paranormal talk radio show with Jim Mallard as your host. See what lies beneath any paranormal activity. Go inside a world that others don't want to see. It's the Mallard Report. Yeah, the Mallard Report.
That it is. It's the Mallard Report. It's Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern live. Of course, many of you listen to the podcast whenever you listen to it, and I'm gratefully appreciative to that. So my guest, I assume, just got back, or a cat knocked his headset off, one of the two, either way. My guest tonight is the psychic lawyer, Mark Anthony, and I was telling him before we started that I had to do some research because he was he was the 12th, well, not even necessarily the 12th guest on the report. He was the 12th show in. And then it's been 67 weeks since you've been on.
Holy smokes, that's a long time.
I know. You know how many shows have probably started and folded in that time?
And you know what's so funny is it seems like just yesterday when I was on, and I guess what it is, because we communicate through Facebook and Twitter and on all that, and it's like you're part of my life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's hard to believe that it's been over a year. That's astounding.
Yeah, and because you posted the blurb on your site today, and I'm ever so grateful for that. I looked back at the other one, and I was on a network that I'm no longer on, and I'm simulcasting on free networks. Plus, I do my own stream now, so it's kind of like amazing how my show has like grown since the last time you were on. Because I did. Somebody said, "Who is Mark Anthony?" And I said, "Don't you remember? It's, you know, he's one of my favorite guests." And they're like, "No, I don't really remember." Because I start, you know, I'm like, "Oh," so I look back at my notes, and I had like 110 fans at that point. Now I have over 800 on my Facebook page, and I'm like, "Wow, the show." I mean, because it doesn't, it's when you're so micromanaging it week to week, you don't notice the growth in things. And then when you stop, and somebody goes, and then you go, "Oh, I guess it is doing better than I thought it was." So.
Well, it is, and I mean, you're definitely, your star is in ascendance. I guess that's what the astrology people would say, and that's a really good sign. And, you know, it's amazing in the last 67 weeks, you know, you were on another network, and now you're on, you know, a full-blown network, and you're streaming, and you're worldwide. And my book, Never Letting Go, was released in October of 2011. And what has happened in the last 67 weeks has just been incredible. It's just been incredible. So it's good to see that we're both doing really well and getting the message out there and reaching lots of people. I think that's very, very positive.
It is. So every time I was there for a while, I haven't seen it for a little bit, but you were out doing book signings, I want to say, every week or weekend, I guess.
Yeah, I was 2012, and so far 2013, I've done a fair amount of traveling as well. I just got back from a tour of Florida, and then before that, I was in Los Angeles, Beverly Hills, Hollywood, did a tour there, and then before that, I was in St. Louis, and then last year, good Lord, I was I spoke at Harvard and Brown about the afterlife and about my book, Never Letting Go. And I was in New York City, all through New Jersey, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Virginia, Colorado a couple times, and all over Florida. And I'm probably leaving out about three or four states. I know West Virginia is one of them. So it's just been incredible being on the book tour and meeting all the amazing people. We got a great country. And, you know, while we're talking about this, let's all send our prayers. And if we can, financial contributions and any other help to the people in Oklahoma that have just been devastated. Back in 2004, where I live, in Florida, we were hit by two very powerful hurricanes within 3 weeks of each other, and thank God my house didn't get obliterated, but many people I know did. And in a town not far from me, 40,000 people were homeless until, you know, they were able to repair their homes. So I can only imagine the horror that the people in Oklahoma are experiencing right now. And, you know, we're a country, and these people are our brothers and sisters, so to speak. Let's help them.
I couldn't have said any better. Thanks, Mark. That is a wonderful point. And like you said, our thoughts and prayers are definitely with those people. They've got bigger things to do tonight than listen to us, so I'm sure they'll catch it whenever they're able to. So, but having okay, well, I guess we should start talking about the book instead of talking about the book tour. I guess so we can sell the book first, and then we can bring it back around to all the fun and all the different things and
all the fun stuff.
So people know what we're talking about. Where'd it go? I'm so organized tonight. Never letting go: a healing grief from help from the other side.
Yes.
Give me a brief synopsis, because like I said, it's been a while. So,
my book, Never Letting Go, is for anyone who's lost a loved one. And I am a psychic medium, and I'm also an attorney. And people are always saying things like, well, how can you be a psychic medium and a lawyer? Well, you know, because I went to law school does not mean that I grew fangs and I drink the blood of the innocent at night. I'm very analytical. I'm a natural skeptic. And law school is very appealing to me. Plus, I like to help people. The sad part about the legal profession is it's full of a lot of people that don't necessarily feel that way, although many lawyers do. And I was born into a family where an ability to communicate with spirits runs on both my mother's and father's side of the family. So the way I look at mediumship, in other words, communicating with spirits, it's all about evidence. As a lawyer, evidence is important to me. As a medium, evidence, getting messages from spirits that contain verifiable facts and information is key. So the book that I wrote, Never Letting Go, it's the subtitle is Heal Grief with Help from the Other Side. And it's how spirits reach out to us because they can feel our pain and our sorrow. So Never Letting Go serves four purposes. It's a guide on the journey through grief. It is inspirational in that it produces or presents evidence of the afterlife. It teaches people how to recognize when their loved ones and spirit are around them. And it's healing with messages of love and hope from the other side. So in a nutshell, that's what Never Letting Go is about. And I was groomed to be a Catholic priest, but I decided to go to law school instead. But I take an interfaith approach because, and I don't mean to offend anyone's religious beliefs out there, because I respect everybody's beliefs, but constantly people are trying to shove down my throat or confront me with their way is the one and only way. And I've traveled all over the world. I've studied Catholicism. I've studied non-Catholic Christianity, Greek Orthodox, Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, Shintoism, and Native American spiritualism. And I am of the profound belief that God delights in a wondrous variety. And as many people as there are in the world is as many potential paths to connecting to God as there are in the world.
Very well said. Cause I was browsing your page, your Facebook page this afternoon, just trying to get a grip if there was anything that I was missing about you or something that, you know, I could ask about. And I've noticed the people that were, you know, publishing or posting their scripture or their hateful message. I'll say hateful message. You're an attorney. You can worry about slander for me. so don't let me cross that line. But, that's horrible. No, but it's just remarkable how people, without even knowing you, because I'm sure most of these people don't, just go to that public forum and say that you should believe whatever they want you to believe.
Yeah, it never astounds me. I mean, I posted briefly, only for about 15 minutes a week ago, I said a day without hateful messages from religious fanatics parading as Christians is like a day without sunshine. And and then I thought, well, no, I don't really want to do that because I am a Christian.
Yeah.
And I know so many people that are fundamentalist Christians who are very good friends. In fact, a very very close friend of mine that I've had for over 30 years is a fundamentalist Baptist minister. But he I never forget, we sat down and I had a discussion with him, and he said, you have a service gift from God. And I go, I thought you'd be all against this. He goes, Mark, he said, we all have gifts from God, and when you have a gift that you can use to help other people, that's a service gift. He goes, I've observed what you do. I've read your book. He goes, you are not doing the work of any negative energy. You are helping people. And to all my fellow psychics and mediums that are out there, we all take a huge a deal of flack and criticism. You get the people that say they're skeptics, but they're not really skeptics. They're just closed-minded. They go, I'm skeptical. I don't believe that. A true skeptic says, I don't know if I believe that, but if you can show me how this might be true, I'll keep an open mind. That's what a skeptic really is.
Yeah, tell me more. That's my philosophy. Tell me more. That's why I bring people in. I want to hear their side of things.
Yeah, I mean, because I'm the worst skeptic of all, because I see all kinds of things in the metaphysical world, and like recently I was, I won't name any names, but I was somewhere where somebody said, well, I'm a physical medium, and I said, well, I'd like to see that, and she took it wrong. She took it like I was being critical of her, and when she described what she was doing, she's not a physical medium at all. She's a channeler, because a true physical medium, there's three different types of mediums. I'm what's known as a mental medium, and I know all the jokes, but a mental medium, we receive our impressions and our images mentally, okay, like we see them in our mind's eye or we hear them in our mind's ear. A trance medium is a channeler, okay, and what they do is a third party speaks through them and temporarily has use of their body. And I've seen that. I've seen really good trance mediums in England when I was studying mediumship over there. And it's really quite fascinating because you can actually see the spirit's energy overlaying his or herself upon the medium. And the facial structure, or at least the light and the shadowing around the medium changes, and it's really cool. It's, you know, some people go, it's demonic possession, and once again, there's the ignorant. If you don't understand something, immediately demonize it and be afraid of it. But when you study it from a science, and everything is energy, as the laws of physics and theoretical physics hypothesize, is you're interfacing with the energy of a discarnate intelligence, which is a spirit. And then there's physical mediumship, extremely rare, has to be done or performed in clinical conditions where the medium actually projects ectoplasm. Now, we've all seen Ghostbuster ectoplasm. Dan Aykroyd, who co-wrote Ghostbusters, is a medium, which I always thought was really cool. And Ghostbusters was kind of his therapy. Long story short.
Funny, I never heard that, so that's...
I've seen him interviewed about it.
It's just amazing how you could drop something in the middle of a long definition that blows my mind.
But a physical medium projects a substance from his or her body, which takes on the form of the spirit who is communicating. Extremely, extremely rare. And it has to be done in a sterile environment because ectoplasm is kind of gooey, and I haven't seen it. That's why I want to see it. But I know people whom I absolutely trust in England, my mentors. It's a very closed society because, let's say the ectoplasm comes out and it touches something like a piece of dirt or a little stick or something laying on the ground, it's going to go back into the medium and it could kill the medium. That's why it has to be done in a sterile environment. So, long story short, this woman's like, well, I'm a physical medium, and she's telling me what she's doing, and she's actually a trance medium. And it's like, okay, so being a skeptic, that's why I want to see physical mediumship up close, and that's one of my objectives. So, anyway, but I digress.
No, that's fine. I've never heard of it, so it's interesting for me to even hear about it. So,
it's a very rare phenomenon, Jim. Physical mediums, and if you'll indulge me, I'll tell a really fascinating story about
it. Go ahead.
It.
I've got 45 minutes. You can. No.
It seemed to be physical mediumship was very popular, I guess would be the word, in Great Britain in the late 1800s, early to mid 1900s. And a lot of people say it's hogwash. And, you know, of course, they're entitled to their opinion. During World War II, there was a woman by the name of Helen Duncan. And Helen Duncan was a physical medium who lived in Britain. She was from Scotland. she was also, rumor and legend has it, used to be Winston Churchill's medium. And so Winston Churchill, who was an avid believer in the paranormal, used to consult with Helen Duncan. Well, as a physical medium, ectoplasm would come out of her and form an image of the person who's communicating. Well, it's November 1941. The U.S. is not yet in World War II. Britain is fighting for its life. Hitler is invaded Russia. Russia looks like it very well may be losing the war. And the British fleet in the Mediterranean is moving against the Italian Navy to cut off a convoy from Italy to North Africa to supply General Erwin Rommel, the so-called Desert Fox, okay? And a German U-boat attacks the British fleet and torpedoes the HMS Barham, which was a big battleship. In fact, one of Britain's best ships. And anyway, it launches like four torpedoes at the Barham, hits it, the ship explodes, goes down, over 850 men are killed. Well, the U-boat commander did not know that he sunk the Barham. All he knows is that he hit it, because he was interviewed after the war. Because basically it was in the middle of a fleet, and so as soon as he hit it, he took off because, you know, the British were trying to get him. And at this time, the British were keeping their naval losses top secret. Because here's the thing, the last thing they want Germany and Italy to know is they're down one battleship in the Mediterranean, okay? And so the Barham's at the bottom of the ocean. Meanwhile, 3 hours later in London, Helen Duncan's doing a mediumship demonstration, and ectoplasm of a man forms, and he's wearing a naval insignia that says HMS Barham on it, and a woman in the crowd goes, "Oh my God, that's my husband." So immediately all these women, because in the British military, their units are formed from like a city. In other words, we don't put brothers and cousins and friends in close proximity in our military units. The British do. So all of a sudden, all these Navy wives are thronging the British military, who wants to know, how is it that Helen Duncan knows that a ship on a top secret mission was at the bottom of the ocean before the British military even knew? So then they start putting Helen Duncan under surveillance, and in early 1944, she's doing a mediumship demonstration, and the British military police break in, and they arrest her and charge her with witchcraft under the British Anti-Witchcraft Act of 1735. She actually goes on trial for witchcraft. Well, Prime Minister Winston Churchill is livid about this, and I've even got a copy of the communique he wrote about this tomfoolery and how can you do this and blah, blah, blah. And the reason being is this is his medium. So this was very embarrassing to him behind the scenes. Publicly, he had to make all sorts of noise about it. And the British Prime Minister does not have pardon power like the U.S. President does. So the big question is, well, why did the British military arrest Helen Duncan? The reason was the D-Day invasion was coming up in June of 1944, and the military in England was terrified that Helen Duncan might do something or reveal something which could compromise the D-Day invasion of France. So when people start saying, oh, physical mediumship is a bunch of bunk, all I can say is, do your research on the HMS Barham and Helen Duncan, and then tell me what you think.
That's an incredible story, Mark. Thanks for bringing that to my attention.
It's cool, isn't it?
Yeah. So I'm gonna twist the question around a little bit,
sure.
because that's what I kind of do here. So would you take her case as a defense lawyer?
Oh God, yes. and the thing is, her granddaughter, I believe, is still trying to get the British courts to grant a pardon, even though Helen Duncan died in the 1950s. Her family's still trying to get her name cleared, and she's been referred to as Scotland's last witch. And the thing is, she was not a witch. She just happened to be charged under the Witchcraft Act of 1735, which interestingly, real quick, Churchill lost the election for Prime Minister in 1945. I'll never figure out that one. I mean, the guy's like saves the world, saves England, and they vote him out of office. But he gets reelected in 1950. One of the first things he does is enact legislation to abolish the Witchcraft Act, and it was replaced instead with what's known as the Fraudulent Mediums Act, which has subsequently been replaced by a Consumer Protection Act in 2000. The reason I'm bringing this up, Jim, in Great Britain, the law regulates mediums. There's standards, you have to be licensed, and you're responsible for the things you say. So let's say in the Sylvia Brown situation with Amanda Berry, that raises very interesting legal questions. I don't know what would have happened. Let's say if Sylvia Brown had been in England or were an English medium and said this to Amanda Berry's mother, ah, yeah, she's dead. Okay. Sorry, Sylvia. But a lot of people believe that Amanda Berry's mother died within a year and a half because she was so heartbroken, and what Sylvia Brown told her pulled the rug right out from under her. And I'm not bashing Sylvia. Okay, I'm just saying that these things happen, and all the stuff that Sylvia said in that reading has not been brought forth by a lot of the media. They're just zeroing in on that one statement. Well, in England, someone who says something like that, which has a negative or an adverse reaction on the recipient of the message, Amanda Berry's mother, very well might find themselves legally liable. So it's very interesting how in Great Britain mediums and psychics are regulated as opposed to how they are not in the U.S.
Would you be in favor of some sort of regulation? I guess the cat's kind of out of the bag. It'd be tough to, I mean, you'd have to figure out some way to do it, but.
Yeah, you know, as a lawyer, I'm regulated up the yin-yang as it is now. You know, people think, you know, lawyers have a carte blanche, and we really don't. What we can say publicly, our advertising, our code of conduct, I mean, everything is regulated, and the bar associations don't stick up for us. Like, the American Medical Association really goes to bat for doctors. The American Bar Association and the individual state bar associations are always saying, well, we can't get involved. Which means they're essentially useless, and there's increasing regulations, not all of which I disagree with. So if you started doing that or trying to implement that here with psychics, you'd have to create some form of governmental entity or quasi-governmental entity like the Florida Bar or the Virginia Bar or, you know, the American Bar Association, come up with a standard of ethics and protocols and requirements. I think we'd be opening a can of worms. It would take years, maybe even decades, before you could actually come up with some type of guidelines that would be workable. And then you're getting into the separation of church and state, because what I do, I look at it as a very spiritual. I don't look at it as religious, but I look at it as very spiritual. But once again, spirituality is a belief system. So now you're going to have a government official coming in and making determinations over what is spiritual and what isn't spiritual. And there's a First Amendment separation of church and state issue. So I'd have to say no.
I agree. No.
No, and ask a lawyer what time it is, we tell you how to build a clock.
No, but I want to go back to this whole bar association thing so I can get you in trouble. No, I'm just kidding. But but aren't most lawmakers lawyers, so you'd think they'd be looking out for their fellow brethren?
You would think, wouldn't you? it is very interesting. It's like, let's say, in the state of Florida, tort reform comes up. Well, tort reform hurts lawyers, okay, and not just plaintiffs, you know, the quote-unquote ambulance-chasing lawyers, and I don't like that term because people say that don't really understand what it is that attorneys do, but it also hurts insurance company lawyers because what's good for plaintiffs' lawyers is good for insurance defense lawyers. And the Florida Bar always says, well, we can't get involved. Well, you know, we go to law school and we learn to be advocates. Well, take a freaking position. And I think the Bar Association should come out and say, no, we don't think that's good. Or, yes, we do think that's good. But, you know, I'm a firm believer of lead or follow, but, you know, just don't get out of the way. because there's so many people that that are always complaining about, oh well, or saying I can't get involved, and then when legislation or something happens which hurts them, then they're like, well, gee, I didn't want that to happen, but I didn't do anything about it. So I think that you need to take a stand.
Yeah, I think taking, I mean, just as a general point of emphasis, no matter what the issue is, it's worth taking a stand on, it's worth taking a stand on.
Absolutely.
Especially if it directly impacts what your profession is. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, yeah, yes, and, you know, being a lawyer is very interesting, and it can be a very rewarding career. And do you ever see that movie, The Devil's Advocate, with Al Pacino?
No, I haven't.
It's an interesting, I use the word interesting too much, it is a fascinating movie where Al Pacino plays the senior partner of this law firm, and Keanu Reeves is a young associate. Long story short, Al Pacino's the devil. And Keanu Reeves asks him, he goes, why the law? And Al Pacino, a.k.a. Satan, says, because it puts us in everything. I mean, can you think of one business, one organization, one anything that doesn't have some type of legal regulation or laws attached to it?
No.
No.
Not at least in the few seconds you gave me there, but I mean, you run down your list. I mean, everything has to do either with a tax or a structure, so no.
Yeah, health and safety standard. Even an artist, okay, well, he or she's got to buy paint. Ooh, paint better not have lead in it. You know what I mean? It's
well,
like,
tax, sales tax, so there's a law there, so.
Yeah. Think about what we're doing now in the airwaves. You've got the FCC. I mean, you know, yes, we have a right of free speech, but if we start, you know, there's certain things. In other words, the right of free speech is fantastic, but there are limitations to it. It's like, what do they call it, the dangerous words doctrine. It would be like going into a movie theater and screaming, fire, fire. It's not funny, okay, because that could kill people. And there are other things like some idiot here in the state of Florida just got arrested and charged with threatening the president because on Facebook, I think it was Facebook or Twitter, he said something like, if that jerk gets elected again, I'll, you know, do this, that, or the other thing. So, you know, you got to be careful about what you say. But when it comes to your religious beliefs, things like that, that do not advocate violence or the violent overthrow of the U.S. government, then you do have a right to say those.
Right. It's just always interesting to find out what you can and can't say and all the fun stuff that gets you in trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, not even in trouble with the, you know, anybody in particular. It's just the fun little messages you get. I don't agree with that. Well, that's good. I'm glad you were listening.
Well, you know, when I was a student years ago, I was in the Soviet Union, and it was really cool. Being you know, a college student and being able to travel to these countries. And I remember we were at a seminar, and they were saying, not they, but the professor, he was Russian, he's Soviet, and he goes, we have same freedoms you do. We have right of freedom of religion. We have freedom of speech and all this stuff. And it's like, they have a really skewed view of that. And I remember that one of my American professors, we were sitting in a bar afterwards having a couple drinks, and he said, yeah, they have freedom of speech here. He goes, but the difference between the Soviet Constitution and the U.S. Constitution is not freedom of speech, it's freedom after you make the speech. And, you know, think about it, like in China or Iran or in this place, you can get up and say whatever you want, but afterwards, there will be repercussions, and a lot of people take our freedoms for granted. The United States, Western Europe, Australia, Japan, we actually have freedom of speech, a lot more so than countries in the Middle East and in a lot of Asian and African countries.
It is a great thing. And I probably should do this. Tonight, my guest is Mark Anthony on the Mallard Report, the psychic lawyer, author of Never Letting Go. You can find that anywhere fine books are sold, or Amazon. oh, goodness. Anyways, none of those people are listening, I'm sure, right? They weren't going to sponsor the show anyway.
Well, Well, I don't think the Islamic Republic of Iran is tuned into us. And if they are, all I can say is I have no problem with the Iranian people, and I have no problem with Islam. I have a problem with the religious fanatic weirdos that run the country.
So, I think we have problems with religious fanatics in our own country.
Period.
Yeah,
They're terrible. I mean, I get these things people say, how dare you conjure the dead? Well, first thing, I don't conjure. As a medium, I open up to frequency. Spirits are all around us, okay? I just have to be sensitive to their presence. And somebody wrote me, Deuteronomy says what you do is an abomination, and you should be put to death. Well, right there is a death threat, so of course I reported them. But then again, Deuteronomy also authorizes me to sell my daughter into slavery. So my question is, well, how much can I get for her, and how can you take something like that seriously? Okay, so it seems like you get the salad bar Christians that just want to go in and pick, you know, what they want to use for their own purposes. And as I understand the teachings of Jesus, who is New Testament, don't cast the first stone, don't judge, don't kill, cool it with the anger, love one another as you love yourself. And that's my understanding of Christianity. Not this, well, the book of Leviticus says that I may, I think it's Leviticus, could be Deuteronomy, if my neighbor works on the Sabbath, I must put him to death. Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah, let's start doing that. Good thing my show's on Tuesday,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you know. Well, and the thing is, when it comes to our sacred texts, it makes people crazy. A lot of them, because especially when they take it literally, and that is their right. That is their right to do, though, and I respect their right to do so. But as a scholar who has studied biblical history, we also have to look at in the time and in the context it was written and the motivations written behind it. And these people say, well, it was written by God, and what you do is evil. It's like, well, it wasn't written by God. It was actually written by people that God was talking to. Is that what you're saying? Yes. So a spiritual entity is communicating information and messages to a person who wrote it down. Is that what you're saying? Well, yes. Well, kind of, isn't that what I do? I mean, I'm a medium.
But you don't write it down. You talk to people. See, if you wrote it down, it'd be, well. Oh, wait, you wrote a book.
I did write it down. It's in Never Letting Go. because in Never Letting Go, and here's the thing. I am a firm believer in religion. And in faith in God. Now, I believe that God exists in spite of religion, not because of religion. However, it's up to each individual how he or she wants to connect with God. We have an absolute right. I may not agree with a lot of things in various religions, but I respect them. And it would be really nice if the people that go around screaming that their way was the one and only way, if they would actually show some respect for people whose opinions differ. And can I tell another story?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was coming back from Thailand. I was in the Far East. I was visiting there and studying Buddhism. And I flew to from Bangkok to JFK. And then I had to grab a taxi from JFK to Newark Airport. To catch the last leg of my flight home. And so anyway, I get out of JFK, and there's all this screaming and yelling because, you know, it's New York. And all of a sudden, I got my bags, and these taxi drivers are like, me, me, me. And all of a sudden, one, like, shoves all of them out of the way and goes, you, come with me. And he grabs my suitcases and flings them in his taxi. And I go, look, I got to get to Newark. And he just zips off in the crowd. Well, I'll never forget, I'm in the back seat, and I'm looking up at the rear view mirror, and he had these big green eyes, and I'm looking at his nameplate, and his name was Hussein, and he goes, he was from, and I asked him, well, where are you from? He goes, I am from Egypt, and he wanted to know where I'd been, and I said, well, I was in Thailand studying Buddhism, and he said, those Buddha people, do they believe in God? I said, well, they don't believe in God. Oh, that is the work of devils. And I said, okay. And he goes, the Quran is the one true word of God. And I'm like, okay. And he goes, what religion are you? And I go, Catholic. He goes, maybe you'll go to hell and maybe you will not. And I'm like, okay. So anyway, and let me tell you, the guy was, and I was afraid he was going to test that theory the way he was driving. I mean, I mean, they were, like, zooming in and out of traffic, and I'm holding on, like, oh, my God, yeah. I had slept in, like, 20 hours, and let me tell you, wide awake. So so he gets me to Newark on time, and he really was a decent guy. He was just very animated and really high-powered. And when he gave me my bags, he goes, I will pray that you go to heaven, infidel. And I'm like, well, gee, thanks. So then the next day, jet lagged to the max, I've been invited to an Orthodox church. So I thought it was a Greek Orthodox church. Oh, no, it was an Antiochian Orthodox church. And at that time, I didn't realize there was a difference. And it was the church of the ancient city of Antioch. And that's where many of the first Christians were from. Because after, you know, Jesus died, a lot of Antioch was like a major, major city in the Middle East. Now it's basically in ruins. And and I was informed that they were the original Christian church. Okay? And so this young man walks up to me, looks me up and down, and goes, what religion are you? And he had like this heavy Russian accent. I guess I'm still doing Hussein. And I said, well, I'm Catholic. You will burn in hell, for the Catholic Church is Satan's whore. And I'm like, what? He goes, Catholics are heretics. And I'm like, all right. I go, this is not a way to get people to join your church, pal. And I just turned around and I walked out because I didn't want to get into it with him. So then later that day, I'm at this grief support group. And I walk in because I'd been invited to speak to them about life after death. And this woman stands up, Bible in hand, and goes, you're a Satanist. Mediums are not of God. And it's like, yeah, right. Isn't everything in the universe created by God? Ergo, I was created by God. Ergo, I am of God. And I go, let me guess, King James Version of the Bible. And she rolls her eyes and she goes, oh, I suppose you think the Catholic version of the Bible is the one true version. I go, actually, I was told this morning it was the Antiochian Orthodox Bible. And so she's flipping out, screaming Satan, devil, and all this stuff. And so I afterwards, it was funny because I sat down with a couple friends and I said, you know, in the past 24 hours, I've been called an infidel, a heretic, and a Satanist by three different people from three different religions who believed their religion was the one and the only true way to God.
Yeah, it's just amazing that some people would take it to that extreme. I got a little note from somebody the other day, and the bottom line was, it's amazing how atheists read the Bible more than people that quote it and know it, you know, they can quote back to them. And because like you were just doing about, and it's just, it is true, though. It seems like the atheists are the most versed people on it because you read the rest of it instead of just the key verses that somebody tells you to read, and you go, wow, that's kind of like selling your daughter. I guess you were saying about selling your daughter in slavery. Yeah, that's current.
Well, you know, I question a lot of the veracity in the Bible, but there, I attended a conference once of biblical scholars, and these were not the ones that are, you know, flinging potatoes at you because, you know, I'm a medium. These were really intellectual people from several different faiths. And one of the passages they really zeroed in on that they believe is most likely a verbatim quote from Jesus is when he is in the temple in Jerusalem and there's an image of Caesar. And I think at this time that would have been probably, I think it was Tiberius. Should have been Tiberius at that time. And I think it was one of the Pharisees, one of the temple people said, what about the image of Caesar? Should we take down the image of Caesar? And, you know, of course there were Roman soldiers stationed nearby along with the temple guard. So what they were trying to do is they were trying to set up Jesus so that he would speak out against the Roman Empire and they could get him arrested and all that. And this is the passage. They say, when Jesus responds, give to Caesar what is Caesar's, but give to God what is God's. And the biblical scholars said that would be most likely a direct quote from Jesus because it was so absolutely perfect. It totally foiled the plot against him, at least at that time. and it placated the Romans, and it made a very powerful message that Caesar is, or whatever governmental authority on earth, is just a temporary thing, and it is the established, you know, rule and order of the day. So give to Caesar. If you, you know, you got to pay your taxes, pay your taxes, but give to God what is God's. Give your heart, your love, your non-material focus to God. And I always found that particular session, I just felt so privileged to be there, because it was really astounding how they explain that.
That's very true. So we've managed to talk religion, politics, and money tonight. So I think we've covered everything that they tell us not to talk about.
I know. It kind of happens with me, you know, because being a lawyer, a psychic, a Catholic, I know, I'm always talking about religion, politics, and money, and then that's what they say, don't ever talk about any of those, but because those are the three things that get people really hot under the collar, and they're also very personal and very emotional. But I love studying religion. I think religion's a fascinating study, because it's a study of God, and, you know, what higher purpose can there be?
It is a phenomenal, fanastic. I almost just made a word up. Phenomenal study.
I liked it. Fanastic. That's a cool word, Jim.
Quick, I better put a patent on it and get the .com. I don't even know how to
spell it,
but I'll figure it out.
I know, by tomorrow morning it'll be fanastic.com, and hopefully by tomorrow morning my internet company will have figured out the problem with my website.
Oh boy! Well, speaking of your website, healingwithgrief.com.
The best way to remember it is no. Just go with neverlettinggo.com.
There we go.
I've got several domain names that I'll point there. One's Heal Grief with Believe. The other one's The Psychic Lawyer, and so on and so forth. But the name of my book, Never Letting Go, is the same domain, neverlettinggo.com. And for the readers, let me talk about my website. You can find out about my book. You can watch videos of me doing readings and interviews of me on television, you know, if you would like to. But there's also a grief management section there, because a lot of people, right after the death of a loved one, they really don't know what to do, and this gives different coping strategies. There's also a section there, the 10 things to say to somebody who's grieving, and the 10 things to not say to people who are grieving. There's also different, the immortality of the soul. I did a survey of several different religions and their views on the afterlife, which I present. And so there's a lot of things there that can help people. I mean, the fact of the matter is, nothing is really going to get you out of the despair other than yourself, but my book, Never Letting Go, is a guide to help you through that, and my website offers some suggestions and advice. And, you know, for all the listeners, please feel free to, if you go to my website, you can click on my like page on Facebook, because I try to give inspirational messages and challenging questions to people. Plus, I let folks know when I'm on shows like tonight, and I like to keep in touch with all the people that have honored me with following me.
And you do a great job of it. I mean, I watch and interact with you all the time via that stuff, so it's not like he's just saying it to say it. He really is genuine about that, so.
Well, you know, it's like if I didn't believe in what I'm doing, then I shouldn't do it. And I'll never forget in law school, in trial practice class, you know, everybody's up there trying to be Clarence Darrow. Now I guess, you know, well, Johnny Cochran, you know, he's passed over, but... I remember one of the trial practice professors saying, if you don't believe in your case, then you're never going to win. And it's true. You've got to have conviction. You've got to have faith in what you're doing. And the hard part about being a lawyer is that, especially when, you know, I did criminal defense work, is getting up there and defending somebody that I know is guilty. And that's very, very challenging. As a medium, I'm getting up there and talking to people in groups and conducting readings and giving lectures, and I believe in this. You know, this is what I believe in. And the book tour has been wonderful. I mean, I spoke at Harvard and Brown toward the end of last year. Just amazing. And just been booked at Yale this September to talk about never letting go and to talk about life after death. And it was really cool, especially at Brown. I thought Harvard was going to give me the tough questions. So all you people at Brown, woohoo! There were scientists there that were asking about vibration and frequency and how do you reconcile this with the laws of physics and all that. And, you know, I'm not a physicist, but I have a basic understanding. And I was explaining things in terms of that. And then afterwards, a couple of the scientists sat down with me and they said, you know, what you were saying coincides with string theory, and they talk about some other particle physics theory. It was really very interesting to have that opportunity to discuss that. So it's been really cool being out on the road talking to people, and I was at Estes Park in Colorado at a hotel called the Stanley. And the Stanley is fascinating because it's the, remember the Stephen King movie and the book The Shining?
Yeah.
Well, that's where they filmed The Shining. And the Stanley Hotel has a reputation for being the most haunted hotel in North America. And when you get there, it's absolutely beautiful. Estes Park is breathtaking. It's right on the doorstep of Rocky Mountain National Park. I mean, you can't ask for a more beautiful setting. And the Stanley has on staff a whole team of ghost hunters and paranormal investigators. Well, I was there at a paranormal conference with Dave Schrader and a couple other guys, and all the guys from the Ghost Hunter TV shows are there. And so they're conducting ghost hunts in the various rooms throughout the Stanley. Very, very interesting. The ghost hunters like to make everything out to be devils. Everywhere you go, there's a demon. I mean, there's a demon in the toilet. There's a demon in the sugar bowl. There's a demon swirling around the, you know, the lamppost. And we're in this one room. It's supposed to be the most haunted room of all, room 217. And supposedly when Jim Carrey was staying there when they were filming Dumb and Dumber, he ran out in the middle of the night screaming, ah! You know, I kind of think it was Jim Carrey kind of doing a Jim Carrey publicity stunt thing. But he refused to go back in. So there we are in the Stanley in room 217. There's about 20 people in the room. There was about 200 folks in the conference. So what they do at these paranormal conferences, and let me tell you, the listeners, if you haven't been to one of these things, go. It is so fascinating. A lot of great speakers. And so there was like 10 different locations throughout the Stanley and the property. And so they'd rotate people in and out about every 20 to 30 minutes. So we're standing in this room, and of course the lights are down low because the ghost hunter people always like that, and all of a sudden a shadow starts forming on the wall, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, holy smokes, that really? And they're like, it's one of the dark people, ah! They're so screaming, shadow people or dark people, I know, something. And everyone starts freaking out, and they all run to the other side of the room, so I walk right into it. You know, my manager, she's going like, Mark, don't do that. Don't do that. And I go, this is a grandfather, and I start saying, all right, there's a grandfather coming through, and I describe him and what he looked like and the heart attack that he died from. Well, this woman starts crying, and she comes over to me, and she says, my grandfather died 3 weeks ago, and you've just described him like to a T. And I said, well, this is what he wants you to know, and he's with his ginger-colored cat. She goes, my kitty died not too long ago, and that, you know. And so it was really nice, and she's hugging me, and I'm hugging her, and I'm like, God bless you, and all this. And so then our 20 minutes or whatever is up, and the next, you know, group leaves. Well, the ghost hunter flips out on me. I don't want you doing that. I go, why? He goes, you're ruining this. I go, ruining it? I go, you want to turn this into a Satan fest? I go, that woman's grandfather came through because she is devastated, and he's getting all pissy. So anyway, so I left, and but at the end of the conference, the Stanley Ghost Hunter team pulled me aside, and they said, Mark, we're really glad you're here, because these people that come, they want to turn everything evil, but we agree with what you're saying. Your conclusions coincide with our observations, that there's a lot of spectral phenomena here, but it doesn't mean that it's evil. And I said, well, it seems like this place is built on a giant chunk of quartz crystal, because it's on this giant, like, granite, and there's a tunnel down below, and that's a whole other story I'll say for the next show. And basically, one of the reasons that the Stanley has so much paranormal, if you will, activity is because it is built on a chunk of quartz crystal, and crystals are amplifiers. And so I don't think that any one place is necessarily more haunted, but this one kind of draws them to it because of the frequency. And so that's what a lot of places that are haunted, it's because of the electrical activity, the frequency, the amplitude, the vibration is enhanced by a lot of the surrounding material. And in the case of the Stanley, it's all the quartz. So it was really, really amazing to be there and to actually work with people that were treating this as a scientist, as a science, even though there were some people there that wanted to be all spooky and scary and, you know, very juvenile.
Yeah. Well, don't get me started on those TV ghost hunters, please. One of the big names, you know, asked me. I sent him a request, and he was very polite, and we traded messages. And then all of a sudden, he stopped replying to me. And I went, what? What's going on here? Well, preferred party information, I got back that he actually listened to one of the shows. And I guess he decided to duck the interview because he was afraid I was going to ask him a tough question. I don't think
what would that question be?
Well, if I asked the question, you may be familiar with the fishing line incident. I'm not going to fish for answers or questions or anything about it. I may mention going fishing with my friends a few times, but I wouldn't ask the question.
Well, very good, very good. Well, you know, I think what it comes down to, and I try to explain this, and here's the thing. I don't have all the answers, not even close, but I have insights. And I've got a lot of experience, because I communicate with spirits on a daily basis. And all I can say is that we can only understand so much because they're slowing their vibration and their vibration down so that they're like dumbing down so we can communicate with them. And it's impossible for us who exist in a finite state to understand infinity, but that doesn't mean we can't grasp that it's there. It's like you and I go into a room, you flip on a light switch, and the lights come on. Okay, that's great. But what is electricity?
Yeah. I
don't know if anyone really knows what it is. We can harness it, we can use it, we can theorize it about it, but what is it really? No, it's energy, okay, of some sort. So you can understand that it exists, and you can acknowledge and respect it, but to fully comprehend what it is a completely different matter. So that creates the unknown, and it is a human being's natural inclination to be afraid of the unknown, to be afraid of what they do not understand. So a lot of the ghost hunters like to make things scary. Because people like, especially teenagers and young adults, they like to go to scary movies. Scary sells. So before I do a reading with people, I tell them there's nothing to be afraid of. Because I get some people that come to me, and I do a lot of phone readings. Or when I see them in person, they're shaking. I go, what are you afraid of? I don't know. I'm just afraid. I go, of what? I go, lamps are not going to fly across the table. Nobody's head is going to spin around. I swear. No, I don't do that. But you have to reassure them that this is a positive experience and it's a conversation with people you love who love you. And that it's all based on vibration and frequency and opening up to being receptive to it as opposed to it being devil fest. And once people understand that and they go through the process, they're like, wow, that was really great. It wasn't evil or scary at all. Because I'm never letting go. This one lady accuses me of doing the work of Satan and said, well, if that's the case, does Satan want you to believe God exists, heaven exists, your soul is an immortal living spirit, you'll be reunited with your loved ones in the light that is God when you pass, oh, and that Jesus was right?
Yeah, some people. I just trying to behave myself, which is tough, you know.
Oh, go for it.
Go for it. Oh, you want me to go for it now? No, it's just remarkable how I don't have words. It's just, you know, it's like people that ask me why, you know, I interview so-and-so or say, you know, ask certain questions. Well, you know, it's the question that I have. It may not be the most politically correct question. If you want to hear politically correct hosts, they're everywhere. I try to do the show as I would do it. Like I said back in the beginning, it's a phone call that people get to listen to. Take it or leave it.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
If you could interview, let's see, well, he's dead now, but if you could have interviewed Osama bin Laden, would you have?
Yes.
And why?
I would like to hear his side of the extremist. I want to hear where that came from and how he practiced that. And that, obviously all the, you know, why, I mean, but all that stuff would come out. Why he, the hatred for America, why this, you know. I think it'd be fascinating to hear. Of course, we'd have to have a translator, of course, and then probably someone would get lost in translation, but. I would like to interview Hitler, too. So.
Yeah, that would have been fascinating to have interviewed Hitler. And I'm sure he was interviewed probably up until World War II started. But yeah, I think that would have been fascinating just to understand or try to understand what was going on between those years. I mean, what is it that made that man so full of hatred and so calculating about it? I think it would be fascinating. Personally, though, I think it would have been much more interesting to interview Gandhi, because to get into the mind of somebody that actually walked the walk and talked the talk of nonviolence.
Yeah, that'd be fun. The list of people I want to interview is rather short. I'm trying to think of somebody right now, but I can't off the top of my head. I'm sure there is somebody somewhere along the line that I could probably pick out and say no. Maybe George W. Bush.
What if he'd do it?
If he would do it, I would do it. I was just picking a name out, random name, just to throw something. No, I would do it.
You want to send something out to the Dalai Lama just for the heck of it, you know?
Yeah.
I remember seeing Barbara Walters interviewed the Dalai Lama, and she says, "Are you God? Are you a God?" And he took his glasses off, and he goes, "If I was God, would I need these?"
Oh, Mark. Oh, goodness. Last minute. I'm going to give you a last minute to promote yourself before I have to slam this all shut. So,
my book is Never Letting Go. My website is neverlettinggo.com. I'm a psychic medium. You can sign up for a reading with me and also find out about my book and follow me on Facebook as well. And, Jim, I want to thank you for having me on your show and letting me just let it all out. And you're doing such a great job and such a great service to so many people and to all the listeners. I'd like to say to all of you, may God bless you.
Thank you, Mark. And hey, we're going to have to do it again before 67 weeks pass, though.
I'm ready, and I got another book in the works, so we'll be talking about that before too long.
Okay. Well, you know where to find me when that time comes, or if I, you know, if you get have a date in mind that you want to shoot over, because I'm booked. Right now I'm looking at October, so, I mean, we're kind of stretching it out, so.
I think that's great. We should all be cursed with success.
That's right. Well, I want to thank you again, and, oh, look. Anyways, have a good night, Mark.
All right, take it easy. Good night, Jim.
Well, before we flip that on-air sign to the off position, a quick reminder. For all things about the report, previews, and reviews, go to italkparanormal.com. That's italkparanormal.com. Good night.
This is Thomas Fusco, author of the book Behind the Cosmic Veil, A New Vision of Reality, and you are listening to The Mallard Report.
Hey, everybody, it's The Mallard Report.
The Mallard Report.